Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everyone. It is the Redmen Originals podcast. I'm Paul Meacham. Alongside me is Chris Pajak. Over the other side, it's Chloe Bloxham and Dan Clough. We're going to be discussing Liverpool's, fun in the sun, 4-2 win over Tottenham Hotspur at Anfield. And then in part two, we're going to have a little bit of a chat around, again, more of the future stuff with Arne Slot discussing a little bit more about him potentially taking over at Liverpool and what he'll do with Jurgen Klopp when that time arrives. We'll dive into all that in due course. But before we do, a couple of things draw your attention to.
My legs!
If you dipped two traffic cones in white chocolate, dipped them upside down. That's what we've got going on at the moment here.
Mini milks.
Chris is in shorts, ladies and gents.
Get used to it.
Couple of things.
Get it all out of the way now. Anyone got anything else to say?
Oh, no, plenty of time. Okay.
We'll use it all summer then.
We've got another show after this as well. Those of you who are attending our end of season party event, which is the night before the last game of the season at Hotel Anfield, our sellout, sold out event. A couple of things. First and foremost, we can now announce that the musical acts that will be joining us are Mark Kenny and Keo. Pulled out all the stops for this one. Two of the best of the best of the best are going to be joining us at Hotel Anfield to sing Liverpool songs, which is amazing. We can also announce that, just for a laugh and because we enjoy the stress, 50 more tickets available. Go and grab them now. They'll be gone probably by the time this podcast is over. If you want to do that, grab more tickets. They're on
Skiddle.
Yeah,
cool. Just like this as well. I'm hosting the night before, busy boy that I am. I'm hosting an evening with John Barnes at Hotel Anfield as well. So basically, what you could probably do is just crash at Hotel Anfield. Go do like a Harry and Marv Home Alone 2 style thing. Maybe hide under the bar, and you might get in for our event the next day. But yeah, Hotel Anfield. There's limited meet and greet available and all that as well. So go to Skiddle, search evening with John Barnes at Hotel Anfield, and fill your boots on that one. I'm really looking forward to that. John's a brilliant guy. I was told basically John just handle it himself, so basically I'm just kind of there to like wind him up and let him go, and John Barnes will just do what John Barnes does, ultra charismatic man that he is. But yeah, you can be in the building for that. Again, head to Skiddle, search for our tickets, search for John Barnes tickets, and have a wonderful end to the season. Speaking of which, obviously, look, I want to get this out the way, Chris, because ultimately, Liverpool not being in the title race affects everyone's mood on and everything to a varying degree and varying extents. And I think it will vary person by person and depending on how much people go online as well, which if you people are watching this loads, is probably the answer to that. So there's a difference between discussing this game in isolation and discussing this game when connected to the fact that we've just basically played so badly that we're not in the title race anymore. And that does make it a little hard to gauge the sort of overall mood and feelings on this one. I feel I felt pretty good. I was out in the sunshine. I was watching Liverpool play well, beating a team that I don't really care for, but ultimately I don't like very much. I had a boss time. How were you with everything on Sunday?
Fine, because I think not being in a title race meant I could enjoy the football more than I've been able to enjoy the football in the last few weeks and stuff like that. So going into it, as you say, the sun was shining. Everyone was just looking forward to catching up with people, having a little chat around the footy, getting to watch the Reds, hoping that this would be the team that Liverpool spank, because it's been coming. Everyone keeps telling me it's coming. We're going to put five past somebody at some point, or a lot of goals and stuff. And just good day out, wasn't it, really? More than anything, I think for 70 minutes of that game, Liverpool performed at their absolute peak, which was a bit mad because, like, in the first half, I mean, I'm not sure we kicked the ball for the first 2 or 3 minutes of the game, but then after that period, we completely dominated. And I looked at the stats at half time, and I think we'd had like 14 or 15 shots or something. They'd had one. We just, they were nothing. There was one of the worst away performances I've seen at Anfield all season long. And it almost took the shine off how good Liverpool were in that first half, because people going, oh, but Tottenham are bad. I'm like, hey, but Liverpool were really good. Can we just enjoy that part of it? Why does it always have to be somebody's fault? Or like, why don't we just enjoy what we were witnessing? And that was Liverpool on the front foot. Probably didn't score as many goals as they should have done in that first half, all told. But going in with a lead, not conceding early doors, it was just a fun game of football to watch, and that's been missing the last 2 months.
I totally agree on that. We've had conversations, haven't we, for weeks now, Chloe, about that. It never really felt like Liverpool were in a title race. And the only thing I can put on this is the Klopp stuff hangs so heavy over everyone, really. And that actually felt like the first time that people were almost like starting to make the peace with it. Actually, like, it sounds stupid to say, because I think we'd all prefer to be in a title race, but actually now that that's out the way, we can get about the thing that's actually been really, people really want to do, and that is celebrate Klopp and give him the send-off that he kind of deserves, because we can't control Liverpool winning football matches, but we can control singing his name and you know, and having a good laugh with it, because I don't think Klopp wants anyone to be sad. I think he wants to end on a sort of as high a positive note as possible.
Yeah, there was just less anxiety in the stadium. I think that was the big thing. Yeah. Like, when in a title race, you could tell just how on edge everyone in that stadium was, and how it felt like everything needed to be perfect for Liverpool. Because, you know, when you've got the likes of Arsenal and City up against you, you know that you have to be perfect. And also, I think a lot of us wanted to win the league more for Klopp than ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never felt that before. I've always wanted it because I'm a Liverpool fan and I've wanted it for me. I've wanted to celebrate. I've wanted that. But more so than anything, I actually wanted it for Klopp. It was what he deserved the most. And the fact that that's now, you know, totally out of the realms of possibility. I mean, it's not totally, but it is in my head.
You'll enjoy it more if you think like that.
Yeah, I will. But
there was a lad talking about goal difference to me yesterday.
There was.
Oh, yeah. Okay, he watches the shower. I was going to ask it, mate. I hope the kills, yeah. Just enjoy the game.
I said that exactly, yeah. Sorry to close into Jeff, but yeah, Dave, you sit behind me, brilliant fella. I love his optimism, and I very much, my experience is enhanced by having people of that you know, attitude around. But he was like, okay, Paul, can we still win the league? And I was like, Dave, just enjoy this, mate. Just enjoy this. Don't worry about that. Yeah. Go on. Sorry, Paul.
Yeah, but it did feel like Liverpool, like that ground knew that was Jürgen Klopp's penultimate home game, and that, you know, we've only got one more of this. And to drink it in and to enjoy it. And also, I'm so sorry, but the sun has a massive impact. Everyone's just a lot happier.
Yeah. There's a chance that we get to watch two games in the sun in an entire season, because we've had one of them. Ridiculous. The weather is so bad. It's not been fair.
But yeah, it was just a really nice day out. And you could tell how much it meant to Klopp in the end with his fist bumps. Even if it wasn't as big of a cheer as it would be in a title race, it was still, you know, him knowing I might not get another chance to do this, so I'm going to make sure I take advantage of it now.
Yeah, that's it. And it's, again, you have to qualify it all. It is sad that this doesn't mean more, Dan, but Yeah, I said it. The Klopp thing is just so huge. It's so huge. It's been a part of it, and it's meant that every kick has been a knife edge. I've not enjoyed any of the seasons when you're going up against Manchester City in the same way, because it is, everything feels on a knife edge. But that was plus. Mm. It was that on top. Like, yeah. Again, this pressure of got to give the manager is due, and every time it went a bit wrong, you actually, you know, starting to play out the scenarios in your head where how devastating that be, and what you actually lose. You're not just losing the manager, but you're losing this idealised end to the mm-hmm. season, this perfect riding off into the sunset sort of moment. And it was that's too much. It was too much for us to bear.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way, doesn't it? I think psychologically it's hard not to sort of make those two sort of combined now in terms of also contributing towards our downfall, because you're right. I think for a while when it was first announced, sort of the immediate aftermath was there's almost a bounce, and a lot of the wins we sort of put down to the fact that they're doing it for Klopp and they're running through that extra mile and really pushing themselves to make sure that Klopp had that perfect send off. But when you just start to waver a little bit in a result, or the odd result doesn't go your way, the negative ramifications thereafter is just as impactful, because everything's heightened so much. And it felt like maybe that pressure, and not just the pressure of the title race and the FA Cup and Europe and all that sort of stuff, that's one thing within itself, but you add into that the fact that you're so desperate to do it for the manager, at some point that may just sort of burn you out a little bit. And it certainly looks like it did that in recent times with the way Liverpool have played. And I think you could see, it was pretty evident yesterday from the performance, that that pressure valve had just been relieved completely, and it was just like a complete freedom to our play. No sort of outside noises going on. It was just like, go out there and enjoy yourselves. And they played like that. They played like they went out to enjoy themselves and express themselves. And it was a proper, wonderful performance. That performance we've missed, really, that intensity, that purpose. And it had a lot of quality in it. And I think you could tell from the fans' perspective as well, it was just like, right, okay, I'm almost glad now that that's done. We can put that to one side and just go out there and just celebrate what's been a wonderful tenure.
It was 27 minutes when we started singing the Jürgen Klopp song, and everyone was just banging to it, and it got loud, like, and the hairs on my arm, few though they are, were stood on, stood to attention and stuff like that. And then it was like, do you know what? Fuck Jürgen. We're going to sing his song for the rest of the game. Yeah. And we're probably going to sing it for 90 minutes against Wolves. And I know you don't like it, Jürgen, but this isn't the time for you. This is a time for us to tell you how much you've meant to us over the course of your nine and a half years or whatever it is. So eight and a half seasons. So I think that was it for me. It was like, do you know what? Now we get to do the proper send off, because it's all been title talk. And it's like, now we get to talk to Jürgen Klopp. And the atmosphere for me was, you know, recency bias, but one of the best at home this season because of how much it meant and stuff like that. And I think every one of us was thinking in the car on the way home, weren't we? We're all going to be a mess come Wolves because of it. It was just a little warm up, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did. I had a little moment where I welled up during the game and thought, because I was thinking about what I'm going to be like in that Wolves game, singing a song and going, at some point, it'll be the last time we're singing that song for him. And that's heavy thoughts to be having with a couple of weeks to go when you're having your fun sunshine game of footy, scoring some goals. Just to bring it back to the actual the footy and the selection performance, I actually thought what fed into it was, felt like there was a bit of freedom in selection to some extent, of because we're not going flat out, there is a degree to which you can just play almost whoever you want, Chloe. I think there's been pressure in recent weeks to get Szoboszlai and Darwin Núñez up to speed, you know, and Salah as well, to be fair. So we've carried almost three footballers for the last handful of games in the hope that, because they're so good, that whereas I think by the time you come around to the Spurs game, like someone like Harvey Elliott, if Harvey Elliott and Gakpo are the prime examples of this, who've been in brilliant form lately, and Elliott all season, to be fair. And I really like that of like, I'm just going to play the lads who I think are in form, and I thought both of them really kind of paid Klopp back for that support.
Yeah, they did. I mean, Harvey Elliott, you said there, has been one of Liverpool's best players all season, to be honest. He's run himself into the ground for you. That's what he offers. And, you know, there was a major stint in February where it felt like we had half a squad, and Harvey Elliott went back to back, 90-120, 90-120. And he was quality in that as well, but he gave everything. And then once Dominic Szoboszlai did start to come back, and you realised how good McAllister was as an eight, and you know, Endo was fit, so you could bring him and put him number six. It was a case of Harvey Elliott had to sit on the sidelines, and just because this 70 mil signing, who started the season off brilliantly, and someone that Klopp really trusts, was back fit and available, it was kind of like Harvey Elliott got pushed to the sides a bit, and he took that pill. He wasn't happy with it, you can imagine, but he still didn't make a fuss over it, and he got his start, and he was absolutely brilliant again. The press and the intensity of that Liverpool side the other day was really good. The amount of times we suffocated Spurs and won the ball back high up the pitch, and Harvey Elliott was a big part of that. The quality on the ball is ridiculous as well. He obviously has one saved off the line in the first half. His ball to Cody Gakpo is absolutely brilliant. His goal is ridiculous. And then on the other hand, Cody Gakpo, that lovely dink back post where he saw the vision of Mo Salah. The weight on its perfection, and also, you know, he takes his header really well. So those are two players who, you know, specifically Cody Gakpo at times has not been good this season, but actually when the going's got tough, he's the one that's actually shown up for Liverpool and made himself count. So yeah, they were two of Liverpool's superstars yesterday.
The Elliott stuff, what we've hinted a bit this over the season, Dan, but I mean he's just, I just love him, I just think he's great. But when you watch, I watched Match of the Day back this morning just to hear what they were saying on the whole thing, and it shocked me almost how much Elliot is involved in almost everything good that we do. And my immediate reaction was prime Jordan Henderson seasons, like 13-14 kind of thing. Like whenever you watch our good performances in that, he's the one winning the ball back and starting counter attacks, and then obviously throughout, you know, good season under Klopp, but also Adam Lallana, early stage Klopp as well. And yeah, he's not 6 foot and he's not lightning quick, but actually he's tireless. He's got an incredible engine on him. He's got a really smart football brain. And because of who he is and his love for Liverpool, he wants to run through a brick wall for the football team as well. But not just that, he's super talented, as his goal sort of evidences. So yeah, it was an all-round perfect Liverpool midfielder performance from Harvey Elliott.
Yeah, it most definitely was, and you've almost just done it there. I'm often guilty myself of sort of saying how his work rate is so brilliant, now he just never stops, and you almost forget in the same sentence that he's actually a brilliant footballer at the same time. Like I always say, oh, doesn't he run around loads and he's dead busy, and then you go, hang on, well, when he gets the ball, his use of it's exceptional, his vision's brilliant and all that sort of stuff. And the moment that sort of encapsulated all of that yesterday was the assist for Cody Gakpo, because it's Salah and Emerson Royale having a bit of a tussle, and Harvey Elliott just goes, well, I'm going to go and win that then. He sort of takes over and goes, I've got it from here. And then the delivery for the goal is just exceptional. I thought he was brilliant yesterday. And what me and Errol were talking post-game, obviously in the Player Rating Show, about him and just specifically how good he was, because he was at the heart of everything we did. But what was so interesting was when he went through the numbers from his game, obviously loads of attacking numbers were boss. I think he had 4 shots on target, which in itself is something. You know, that's really, really good for an individual. And then you're not too far away from going, oh, actually won like 5 out of 6 ground duels as well. So to put in, that is a proper all-round performance, as you're saying, and he might lack a little bit in that physicality. He's not 6 foot odd, he's not absolutely lightning quick, but it doesn't matter. When you put performances in like that, you can't not pick him. And I think that's where we are now. I think for ages it's been, well, Szoboszlai clearly has everything, but he's not playing well.
Yeah.
Harvey Elliott is playing boss, so go on then. And he's done it all season long, to his credit. So he's one who's going to be looking at the new manager coming in as an opportunity as well. I think he's going to relish this challenge and go, I'm going to make myself undroppable in your team, because it's a bit of a clean slate, I think, when the summer comes around. And the way Harvey Elliott is playing and the way he is in terms of his drive and the way he sees football, he's going to be one who's looking at this and going, yeah, fancy a little bit of that.
That right-hand side was pairing, wasn't it, with Trent Alexander-Arnold, with Harvey Elliott, with Mo Salah as well. They all just seemed to know exactly what the other was going to do. And, you know, to your point about Harvey and how good he is, he has 3 goal involvements yesterday. What's it called? Goal creating actions, GCA, on the stat sites and stuff. So his 3 goal creating actions, because goal, you know what a goal creating action is, right? So it's the 2 things.
Yes, but explain it anyway.
Of course, for anyone new to this, who hasn't been doing YouTube or football for 14 years, goal creating action would be the 2 things prior to so it could be a pass, could be a tackle. So we get a tackle for the Gakpo assist, he then gets the pass for the assist. He actually gets a take on for his own goal as well. So he gets 3 goal creating actions from his 9 shot creating actions on the day as well. Obviously a goal, obviously an assist. So a tackle, a take on, and a pass I mean, that sums up Harvey Elliott, doesn't it? He's everywhere. Right, yeah. And, you know, final third, like, there was three or four times I can remember where he wins the ball back really high up the pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them resulting in a goal and stuff. He's just exceptional, isn't he? Like, and that's it. He was our youngest player on the pitch yesterday.
Well, he's just turned 21.
He's younger than Gerald Quanta.
Yeah.
Like, and this is the other thing that we keep forgetting about him. Like, I mean, I think he's about 30 days ago, a month ago, wasn't it? He probably turned 21. Like, he's so young still, but he's just been around for so long. And yet, he's 3 years away from his peak. And yesterday, I would look at it and go, Gerald Quanta was massive yesterday. Mm. Harvey Elliott was massive yesterday. Mm. The two youngest players in the side. I mean, that's a brilliant thing, isn't it? And he doesn't have, I don't think, Dan, the inconsistencies of a young player, Harvey Elliott.
No, far from it. Certainly this season, he's really gone from strength to strength for me. And what you're right in terms of picking out those standouts, and if you'd have said to me, I don't know, 2-3 months ago, who's going to be the standout performers on this particular day, I would never have picked Gerald Quanta and Harvey Elliott. And that's not to discredit them as players, because they're absolutely brilliant, the pair of them. But, you know, big occasion, Anfield, Spurs and all that sort of stuff. For those two to be the real shining lights, that says a lot about the two players that we're talking about here. But what I love so much about Harvey Elliott is he typifies everything that's good about Liverpool players, because there is no such thing as a lost cause of him. Like, that just doesn't come into his vocabulary whatsoever. He just runs and runs and runs all day. But again, on top of that, when he gets the ball, he knows exactly what to do with it every single time.
Yeah, I adore him. I want to talk Gakpo, but without talking Nunes specifically just yet, because obviously there's the social media stuff that's come off the back of it, which I think we'll do in the start of part two. But let's just talk about Gakpo and his performance, because look, ultimately he's there on merit. You know, that's the reality of it. And I think, you know, I'm sure Sam Walker, if he's listening, we had a bit of a funny back and forth on our Redmen family WhatsApp group in the build up to this, because he was a little annoyed that Gakpo was getting the nod ahead of Nunes. He feels like Nunes should be played into form and what have you. But that's the sort of forever the problem, isn't it? If Liverpool have been trying to play, I think, too many footballers into form, and it's really not worked. And I think you give Salah as much, you play Salah until he comes into form, because you know he's definitely going to come into form at some point, or you conclusively prove that he's done, and then actually it probably helps your decision in the summer. Whereas I think, you know, Nunes is still young enough that he'll bounce back a summer off and whatever, he'll come back stronger. But right now, Cody Gakpo, when we've been in our worst spell of form, he's been in the top two or three performing players in that thing, which is, wasn't a high bar, I'll admit, but actually I could pull his performances out and go, yeah, they would have been good performances in well-performing Liverpool teams winning football matches. So I was made up for him, Chris, that he has a really positive impact on the game in terms of, like, obviously creating goals, but also getting his goal as well. And it's almost like we've forgotten this is what he was doing for us last year.
Yeah.
A good player.
He is, and, you know, it's the makeup of him playing centre forward and having Luis Diaz on that left hand side is just so different to what we've seen even at the end of last year, because they're just switching places for 10 minutes at a time. But when he picks the ball up and he runs, like, we talk about like a Bobby Firmino light performance, that's more than what Bobby Firmino did. When he drives on the ball, he looks like Prime Ox or something like that, you know, Prime Gerrard sometimes, in the way that he just carries the ball distance really, really fast, and he uses it at the end of it. He's really clever. He's obviously looking to bring other players is in, but he's not afraid to get into the penalty box. He's not afraid to get in between the sticks and, you know, get himself a goal, a little header. Brilliant header, actually, because obviously he beats Romero, I think it is, in the air, isn't it? You know, he has to put, there's not a lot of power on the cross, so he has to do some work there and stuff. But when he gets out to that left hand side and Diaz is through the middle, that's when he excites me, to be honest with you. But that's obvious, isn't it? Wingers always going to excite you more than maybe a centre forward. But he's got good knowledge of the game, he's got great technique, he deserves to be starting games up front for Liverpool at the moment. And the more I watch him, the more I think, oh, this is, where was this the first 6 months of the season? It's a negative way of looking at it, but you do sort of like, oh god, why weren't you playing this well? You've clearly got it in, yeah. But he looks like now he's carved himself out a role within the squad, whereas maybe before he was a bit of a, he never really knew where his place was.
Yeah, it's been a tough season for him, hasn't it, Chloe? Because it's quite clear that Liverpool doubled down on Darwin for this season. They go, right, he's the main man, put him centre forward. And look, you know, again, we'll discuss him, but for the first half of the season particularly, I think he was performing brilliantly in doing it, and actually beyond that as well. And Gakpo's really struggled to find his regular game, and he's had injuries as well, in amongst that. That's actually funny that it's the Spurs game at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium when he picks up an injury and misses some footy off the back of that. He's not quite fit, and all of a sudden we've had these conversations not too long ago where you're going, is he the third best option for centre forward? Is he the third best option for the wing? Well, this is the guy who was leading the line for Liverpool last season. And to be able to, now when the chips are down, he's been given his opportunity and he's grabbing it, feels like the pressure of it. Feels like almost someone's reminded him that he's 6'3", 6'4", and probably bigger, faster, taller, stronger than most of the people he's coming up against. And yeah, there's been real fire in his belly, and that's actually one of the things I've enjoyed about him. He looks like he's fighting for his place.
I think someone's told him that a Dutch manager is coming into the club potentially, because he really has, put the effort in the last 2 months. He's been our best player in a large majority of those games. There's always been, and it's been absolutely drab to watch. There's always been, well, the only thing I can really put my hat on is the fact that Cody Gakpo at least looks, sharp. He looks interested. And he's got loads of quality. We mentioned the start of the season. Look, he was playing as an eight for a couple of games. Yeah. That's not where he plays. I don't think we know his best position in terms of left wing and striker, because obviously when he was doing that Firmino type role, he was unbelievable at it towards the end of last season. But for PSV, he was a left winger, and you're seeing what he can do when he interacts with Diaz and switches places, because the ball back post is brilliant to Mo Salah. The way he drives, and he can go either way because he has the pace. You don't always see the pace, but he has the pace. Yeah. But he also has the finesse to do what Luis Diaz does and cut inside. And he was having shots in and around the area, and usually when that happens and it's not a bad shot, the crowd can sometimes get a bit frustrated. But we were actually really bang up for it because he was creating these opportunities for himself to have a go. Yeah. He found himself across all of the front three pretty much. He does well to win the ball back. We know how good he is at pressing and setting that press as well. And it's just really good to see that, the player that you thought was still there, because there was a point in the season where a lot of people are probably like, right, well, let's just sell Gakpo and get someone else in, because that was something that was going around on Twitter.
A month ago, I'll be honest, he was the first one I was thinking, because a bunch of players you go, well, you can upgrade on. But like I say, Endo as an example, you can just get better. There's no need to sell him. You can keep him and get someone better. But I was like, Gakpo's a saleable asset. There's a guy you might get £40 or £50 million back for, and then you can go and chuck that on there. But you're right, all of a sudden. I mean, again, it's nothing definitive, because there's a new manager to come in, and we'll see. He might not like the style in which he plays at either of those roles for what he wants. But yeah, that's what you want. You want to end the season at you with questions, and that's what Gakpo's done, if nothing else.
And also, he's so versatile, like we've just said. He's played the eight before, he's played left wing, he's played striker.
Played right wing.
Yeah, he's played right wing. So, he's got the quality there, and it's been really good to see. And also, I've just really been excited to see him play on that left wing, because, and I don't want to dig at Luis Diaz, but Luis Diaz is superb, but he has no end product, and that's just how I see it. Absolutely love the lad. But Cody Gakpo, I know, is a really good finisher at the same time. And look, the reason we win a League Cup this season is because Cody Gakpo's leading the line and is stepping up with massive goals in a rotated side. And I just like the fact that from the left wing, he had a massive input on the game in terms of assists, goals. And that's what you really want to see from your front three. So yeah, I'm excited by Cody Gakpo. I'm excited that there's a Dutch manager there coming in as well. Hopefully that improves him more. Because we were searching the other day when I was making that video, and there is actually footage and videos of Slot with Gakpo.
Oh, really?
Yes. So hopefully, that's just he's going to go into the summer and really work hard and come out boss.
I want to draw attention. This is to be taken with a grain of salt, because there's more depth to this, statistically speaking. But of his appearances this season, so 51 appearances across all comps, 25 of them as a centre forward, 11 goals from centre forward effectively. Now, the caveat to that is, of course, League Cup and Europa League, where it's not Premier League standard, it's not Champions League standard, of course. But that's a pretty decent goal return from being in that sort of position. When you consider from the left wing, he's got 3 goals and 12 from that sort of side. Not conclusive by any stretch, but when you see him perform like that, and I know, like, it's weird because he actually doesn't really play centre forward for us on Sunday. Every time I looked up, Luis Diaz was playing, was in that position. But given the rotational elements and given where he scores his goal from, Dan, and what we saw at the back end of last season, he's definitely an option for there.
Yeah, 100%. He definitely showed us what he had in his locker yesterday. When you consider, obviously, the assist as mentioned is brilliant in terms of quality and in terms of the vision with which to pull it off, and obviously Salah's movement is a big part of that, which is wonderful as well. The stop and go, that's proper Mo Salah. That I loved it. But yeah, Cody Gakpo from that side, and I quite like the fluidity of him and Diaz interchanging and swapping, because that's a defensive nightmare, that if you don't know who you're picking up half the time, and you play the roles in such different ways as well, that must be, you don't know whether you're going with Diaz or coming with Gakpo at any given point. So I think that's really smart from those two. And Gakpo, I've been a big Cody Gakpo fan ever since he's arrived, really. I think he's a really intelligent footballer. I think there's a lot to him, and there's no two ways about it. I felt like a bit of a Gakpo apologist for much of the season because it wasn't happening for him, and I think a lot of that was down to the versatile thing. As much as it's a strength of his, it was kind of his weakness as well a lot, because we had a hole to fill on the side. I'll put Cody Gakpo there, it'll be fine. That's kind of how it felt for a while. We weren't getting anywhere near the best out of him because of that. In recent weeks, he's really sort of found a home, and I think he suits the role he's playing right now. But as I say, the assist from the left-hand side, and then that header, like that header for me, that's out the top drawer. That, like, that's a proper centre forward. You don't see much of that these days.
Why do we say out the top drawer? Is it just, you know, that's, you know, that the top drawer is the best drawer?
Yeah, and my top drawer in ours is just full of crap.
Yeah. It's the man drawer, that, isn't it?
Anyway, what I will say,
because let's be honest, the bottom drawer is a fucking pain in the ass to get down to.
I don't know, I can open it with my feet.
I don't know if mine opens anymore.
Can you get the stuff out?
With my toes.
Oh wow!
Yeah, you just flick up it.
So you don't keep your scissors.
On the numbers, I don't know how many of them in 90 minutes. I imagine not loads of those appearances will be 90 either. So that's even more impressive, therefore. But I think the fact he's played 51 games, did you say? Mm-hmm. That's a lot of footy. That's what I mean. Because we were waxing lyrical about Gino Wijnaldum being Mr. Durable and being his best availability, his best asset is his availability. But Cody Gakpo's played 50 plus. He might end up with 53, let's say, which feels like a lot of football to me. So
there's a knock-on impact of having Gakpo in the centre forward, and that is the box midfield is done in a slightly different way. It's done with Gakpo, and you think back to the first half, Trent stayed right.
We spoke about that, time,
and there was a lot of space for Trent on that right hand side. And I mentioned earlier on that sort of link up play down the right hand side. What happened when Nunes comes on? Trent goes more into the middle, because you want your number overload in the middle of the park. Obviously, your four-man midfield, you have to use Trent to get that four-man midfield when Nunes is there, because Nunes ain't going to do it. When Gakpo does it, it gives us that little bit more versatility in-game. It doesn't always have to be Trent. Trent can stick on that right-hand side, whip balls in, etc., etc. So having that option and that string to our bow is obviously a good thing for us as well.
Yeah, tactical flexibility. Just acting on the specifics of the game, Paul Tierney, referee, again, continues to be absolutely fucking dreadful at his job. I've come to the realisation there was one moment actually that really sparked it, is that at what point did we stop getting yellow cards, or people stop getting yellow cards for kicking the ball away? Like, at what point in the season did that stop being a thing? Because it happened in the first half, and Trent turned around to Paul Tierney and went, mate, we've just seen him kick it away. We stood here. Are we not doing this anymore? And it got to
two blocked free kicks as well, for some reason.
Trent just blammed it at someone and got him a buffing.
There was another one that should have got one for it.
I think Bissouma punched the ball away at one point.
Yeah.
He was so frustrated, he just whacked it.
But it got me to thinking about this thing about, it happens every season, but it's never been more on top than this year, of how they change the rules as the season goes on and no one discusses it. Like that kicking the ball away thing, we've suffered for that. You know, we've picked up yellow cards for that. And particularly in the first month of the season, we had a number of them. And now it's just not a thing anymore. And then it goes on to it, and it was the Cody Gakpo non-penalty, which is absolutely a penalty, by the way, because if Kai Havertz is getting a penalty last week...
This weekend.
For the trailing leg thing...
Either a penalty, by the way. I'm going to set my soul out early doors. Yeah. I don't think they're penalties.
But I'm saying, this is my point, is that is a penalty because it's been given as a penalty. But the problem is they're reffing week to week now, or game to game, because someone's then watched that and gone, oh, that was a bit soft. Well, we best not give that again. So actually, because Cody Gakpo's one effectively happens after the people kicking off about Kai Havertz, he doesn't get it, because they then talked about, the expression was, Guy Mowbray said it in commentary, it's like, because of the way in which he moves, and oh God, I wish I'm paraphrasing, but something to do with how his leg ends up and it's not in stride or something like that. And
is
I was like,
the habit one?
No, this is how they described the Gakpo one in the match of day two. Coverage of it, the commentator is listening to what the VAR are saying and he's verbatim saying what they've said, and it's like an unnatural fall plus something. People might in the comments might be able to tell me exactly what it was, but I was thinking, I've just heard a brand new expression again, and I'm looking at that and going, there's no difference. In fact, it's worse, because Gakpo is just running past this man, and I know his arms go up, but ultimately, when you, it's half appeal and half being fouled, isn't it? But that Havertz one was one of the softest things I've seen in my entire life.
Oh, he no, the Havertz one, if Harry Kane's still in the Premier League and does that, he's left his leg on purpose there.
Yeah,
and
it's clever.
He's bought it. Yeah, he's it's bought clever, isn't it? You know what I mean? I don't think either are penalties, to be honest. And I think the difference between the Havertz one and the Gakpo one is Havertz probably could have still got the ball. Gakpo could not, and it went nowhere near anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing that really set the two apart, I reckon, because he kicked it freely to nobody, whereas Havertz still could have. He still dived, don't get me wrong. I still don't think either are penalties. I definitely thought it was a penalty in the ground, but it was the other end of the pitch.
We had a few of them.
Poor player going down in the penalty box.
We had a few of them as well. There was one where Salah was fouled, and we got nothing. And I genuinely think it's because Tierney went, oh, he can't get that. And I'm like, it's Mo Salah, he can. You know, like, why are these fellas judging what is a dead ball? You know what I mean? Or what's too far ahead and all that kind of stuff. He's got, no, he's fucking rubbish. He's in a long list of rubbish ones. Not as rubbish as Anthony Taylor was last week, but still just fucking piss poor. The absolute gang of gobshites.
The thing that does my head in still is the not raising the flag when you know it's miles offside thing. Yeah, like, it's just pathetic.
Well, Alisson made that chance. Big save.
Yeah.
Alisson made it from Son, wasn't he? Yeah. And Trent basically just didn't even run back, because he was like, I know full well this lad's about 5 yards offside. He's just watched it play out. Good save, though.
Yeah. It was a great save, but why did he do it?
What a waste of time. Infuriating.
And yet, I've seen Liverpool attack and them just put the flag up, and I'm like, why don't you let it go
down? Yesterday, and it was really tight. Like, I don't actually know if we scored from it, but the game kind of played on. We still had the ball in the attacking moment, and the lineup put his flag up, and I was like, okay, watched it back, and I was like, I'm not sure. Sure, he should have put his flag
that
up there.
That was the end.
Salah one. Yeah, it was close.
Where Salah scored?
Did he score in the end?
Yeah, Gakpo.
Yeah, he put it in the back of the net.
Yes, he did. You're right.
Was it
Nunes
who put it across? Was it Gakpo?
I'm not sure.
Nunes.
There was one in the first half, one where Salah hit the post from an offside, and he probably should have squared it, I think. Yeah, but ultimately, the point remains.
Garbage, a lot of them. Let's do Mo Salah.
Let's.
Chloe, much better. Generally speaking, it was much more. I've not recognised Mohamed Salah now since he came back from AFCON in terms of how he's performed for Liverpool. That was him picking the ball up at wise, driving towards the 18-yard box, being creative, creating chances, still having lots of under-hit shots at the goalie, which he still needs to have a little think about. He needs to decide. Someone needs to let him know permanently whether he's got the power in his shot anymore and to go against that. But he was fast. He was running in behind. He looked like actually there was a benefit to giving him a bit of rest. He looked sharp. He looked fired up. Not the best Mohamed Salah performance, but if you're rating it against what I've seen in the last couple of month or two, if that was more like what I wanted to see.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, peak Mo Salah, but it most definitely was better than what we've all been sat there watching. He looked like he backed himself again. You know, a lot of the time when he has the ball at his feet, it all just feels natural to him, like he already knows what he's going to do. And, you know, he speaks about manifesting all of this to happen, and it felt like he kind of did that.
He definitely manifested himself getting dropped last week.
Yes, that is
that over the course of about four games.
But yeah, the movement for his goal is absolutely brilliant. He obviously hits the bar. He has some lovely passing where maybe a couple we should do better inside the area, but it just felt a lot better. It felt like when Mo Salah had the ball, he was a lot more involved. There's been loads of times in the past month or so where we've just not been able, his first touch has been horrific, and you've just not been able to get him into the game. Well, he was very much in the game. He had Emerson Royal on toast. I bet you that lad ate him. And yeah, it felt like a much better performance, and he was obviously helped out by Trent and by Harvey Elliott, those triangles down the right hand side. But it just felt like when Liverpool needed to get out, or when they had to put a ball to a lad under pressure, it could be Mo Salah, and Mo Salah was taking a really good first touch, was making sure the man wasn't getting to the ball first, and then he was setting us away, and we've not been able to do that in the last month or so because the first touch has been awful, or he's lost the ball, or the defender's nicked in and won it first, and he was just a lot more involved. He should have another assist as well. Darwin Núñez should do better with his chance. What a ball that is. I don't care what anyone else says. There was two with lads the there who could have been on it, but still
the cross.
It's a cross.
He's got two in the back stick and misses both of them.
Yeah, he also misses a really good chance. I mean, he hates using his right foot. The right foot in the second half's horrific, and then the one where he just stabs a foot and misses it from a yard out, pretty bad. But it was a lot more of a Mo Salah performance. He very much was a vocal asset. He was one of the lads who was going to get you over the line. He did that. I also enjoyed his response after Darwin Núñez missed, where he just stands there and claps him, I guess. And he's like, he's the only one in that ground who's...
There's just a general sense, just to do the recriminations bit, Dan, that if Salah had played at that level for a month, if we'd been able to get Trent to the level of fitness that he was at finally for the Tottenham Hotspur game, I think we're very much in the title race. Now, again, it's recriminations. Yeah. It is what it is. There's nothing, we can't go back in time. We can't change things. But that was my little bit of sweetness over that result, because I was watching us going up against a Tottenham Hotspur team that clearly still wanted it. Mm. They went on the beach. You know, they were going for it. And when they get the goals, and you can see it, would they think there might be something for us in this, you know, when they got a little sniff of it. That will be the undoubted pity about that game.
Yeah, well, therein lies the frustration, doesn't it? Because when you are in times of need, like Liverpool have been in recent weeks, and we are desperate for results, that's when you so often turn to Mohamed Salah, Virgil van Dijk, Alisson Becker, etc., Trent. And we haven't been able to do that for a couple of them, partly due to injury, obviously, with Trent, or lack of fitness, I should say, in terms of when he come back. And Mo Salah's just not been in form. It's just playing as simple as that. And he's so talismanic for Liverpool, and he has been the guy to sort of drag us through games so often down the years, ever since he arrived, really. When he's not been able to do so because he hasn't quite been himself, then yeah, it's come with a sense of frustration. It's just like, oh, what could have been? And I think we're right to think that, because yesterday was a marked improvement, and we've seen Trent back to his best and obviously able to do longer in the game, and longer at a level in the game as well, not just be out there and play his
totally
sort of maximum. Yeah, exactly. And you could tell, couldn't you, at times he was just kind of going, oh, I'm done here, but if I get the ball I might kick it somewhere good. But generally speaking, his overall play just wasn't there. But yeah, on Salah, Chloe's right, he absolutely tormented Emerson Royale yesterday, and he just looked, again, I come back to what I said right at the top, he just looked, played more freedom, a smile on his face, he looked more up for it, and whether what happened the week earlier sort of played into that fact obviously remains to be seen. But yeah, it was a much more Mo Salah-like performance, and probably a reminder to all of us that write him off at your peril a little bit, because I think there has been some of that. And listen, I'm as guilty as anyone, because there's no two ways about it, like, he hasn't been playing very well. And a lot of the fundamentals of what Mo Salah is weren't working. Nothing was happening for him. But to see him like that yesterday, albeit there were still some moments where you thought, I'm not quite sure about that. But by and large, yesterday, it was so, so much better.
Yeah, and it was an interesting point made. I think it might have been Ashley Williams. I'm talking about the West Ham performance, which we'll talk about on the Bias Football podcast. But, you know, like, if there's a new manager coming in, they're saying, you know, if you're going to switch off like that, you're auditioning for the guy who's going to follow. And there's a bit with Salah, Chris, where, you know, the talk in the week has been, oh, he might be offered a new contract. You know, he might not be wanting to move to the Saudi Pro League. He'll want to stick it out. Well, Michael Edwards is the guy at the helm who, by all accounts, doesn't really like giving contracts to older lads. Well, Salah can't just get to the end of the season playing like he's been playing and expect everything's going to go his way. You know, he's not. He's been talismanic for us. He's a brilliant footballer, but he holds a market value. And if someone's not pulling the weight, they will get shifted. And I don't know whether that conversation has been had, or ultimately it's just Salah, the ultimate pro, has finally got himself back to a level of fitness and fire that he could put in a better performance. But that's what you need to be seeing from him, because he can't just coast to the end of the season.
No, and I think that there's got to come a point with Salah where you look at the amount of games that Liverpool have. I think yesterday's performance was a large part for not having a game midweek. I really do think that, and I think that will have impacted Salah's performance, especially because, you know, he has been almost robotic in the way that he's been able to go game every 3 or 4 days for the last however many years, apart from this one injury this season and stuff, and obviously the Champions League final a few years ago. Like, there's got to come a point where Salah can't do two games a week. there has to come a point where you've just got to pick your games for somebody like him. And, you know, whether that's now or whether that's in a year or two's time, I'm not 100% sure. I think yesterday he played with a fire in his belly, whether that was because of last week and what happened or whether that's because of a new manager coming in again, I don't know. This is a grey area as a football fan, isn't it? You know, you're spinning loads of different ideas around. You've got an idea of what you think it could be. I think more often than not, it was probably the fire in the belly from the week before rather than a new manager, because I think of Mo Salah as an ultimate professional who will put everything in every single game because he's a Liverpool player. He doesn't need that added thing, but they're also human beings. So it must impact him in some way. Maybe it's just a small percentage or whatever, but you are thinking about the future. You are fighting for your place. You are wanting to play the next couple of games in the league this season. You want to make sure that you're still the talisman at Liverpool. You don't want to be a talking point in the summer. You want to be thought of as an asset that Liverpool have still got and stuff. And I don't think he had a particularly great game yesterday. I think if I was rating it would have been a 7 out of 10 performance, but it was a marked improvement on what I have seen. He was more involved in the game. He did create big chances for the players around him. He got into good positions. I don't think he particularly ripped Emerson Royale, if I'm being honest. I mean, I don't remember him going past him once, but he certainly was a thorn in his side at times, you know, recycling possession and stuff like that. So yeah, much improved for a player who has got a lot of improving still to do to hit his normal heights.
Yeah, I dread to think what ratings he's had for the last month, if that's a 7.2.
Yeah, they've been down there. Like, what he did yesterday as well, just on that, he got back a lot. As well, there's a moment whereby he's at right back, they try and win the ball back forwards, which is another positive sign. Because if anyone was thinking, you might have thrown it in here, Mo, given what happened at London Stadium, that was clear evidence that that isn't the case.
100%.
Yeah, he was also fouled a fair amount and obviously didn't get anything for it. The one where a ball goes over the top and someone just rags his collar and it's like, nothing's given.
I think that's the one I was talking about before, where like the referee's gone, there's no way you're catching that, so it's not a foul.
But yeah, he got ragged, still continues to get mauled a little bit.
Vintage Salah in that regard then. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, want to talk about what important moments or moments in the match.
Not conceding first would be a massive moment.
I put this as a tweet. How magnificent is it to like not... Because they had that corner about a minute and a half in. I was like, well, this is it. This is when we concede. This is what we've been doing of late. I've seen this played out at Anfield.
It was the first 3 minutes of the game. We didn't touch the ball.
But to get the first goal, then not to concede, then to add the second goal and go and have to... And then actually to start the second half the same and come out just as dominant. But actually, I thought because the substitutions didn't help us.
No.
I think they helped Spurs and didn't help us. I thought two things were interesting. One was Son's a much better player off the left-hand side and he caused us an app. It gives a torrid time. Richarlison actually had a good game playing, leading the line for them as well, particularly his role, not only scoring, but actually for Son's goal. But Klopp actually referenced the Vucetic one and said, I've probably got that wrong, and he described it as like, was it like getting on a bicycle on the motorway? Yeah, on the motorway. And I was just made up to see Stefan Vucetic. And if you can't bring him on at 4-0 up at home with three games left in the season, or 2.5 games left in the season, then I don't know when you can.
5-0.
Yeah, maybe. So, no criticism to Vucetic, because what Klopp's saying is right. Getting up to the speed of the game is a difficult thing for him. He's a talent. He's allowed it. But Spurs got better and we got worse.
And it obviously happened straight after the fourth goal as well, didn't it? So I think there was a little bit of Liverpool maybe taking the foot off the pedal a little bit. I thought, a lot of people around me were saying like, yeah, Endo lost the ball a lot and stuff. And he did. He lost the ball more than I thought he should have done. But I thought in a defensive sense, he was actually excellent. And it was probably highlighted by the fact that when Endo goes off, Vucetic is the one to come on. And I think the gulf, because of the fitness levels of Vucetic, was quite big and almost insurmountable for Vucetic yesterday. So I think that was a difficult thing. I thought Andy Robertson going off, you know, took a lot of the impetus out of Liverpool going forwards as well. And, you know, I think I'm right in saying for their first goal, I don't think Joe does anything particularly wrong, but the ball does go inside of Joe Gomez. It's to Kulusevski, maybe. I don't know whether he was still on the pitch, but goes inside of him, and that's how they end up getting there first. I think it was.
There's a couple of things where Gomez is racing back towards his own line, and actually, there's one where he does really well, but there's a couple where he doesn't cut the cross out, which, you know, you're not saying Robertson definitely does that, but when you've brought your more defensive left back on there, he didn't make us ironclad at the back.
No, and Robertson's a leader in the side as well, isn't he? And he's been, you know, while Cody Gakpo, who's been in absolutely great form, should be one of our players for the last month. Robertson's been right up there with him. He's actually lethal turned into our scorer. Most lethal goal scorer. Yeah, he's absolutely spot on there. And, you know, he's having one shot and scoring one at the moment, isn't he? I mean, Darwin Núñez, take notes, mate.
Yeah.
So I think losing Robertson, losing Endo really did have a big impact, and then Liverpool deciding to stand around like statues for 10 minutes probably didn't help either.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. Yeah, really annoying to see Richarlison do. I've got a real soft spot because Madison's got this as well. I don't mind really disliking footballers. I like disliking footballers because I think it adds something to the game. But I do think he's a prick and I don't like him scoring at Anfield and I wish he'd stop. But he was good. I have to hold my hands up again. His role for that second goal of just basically holding Trent so he can't get over on the cover was really, really intelligent. And Son's a good player, isn't he? Annoyingly so.
Son looked like, you remember ISS 98?
Yeah.
Like when you could, that was one of the footy games where you could just dribble and score, couldn't you? You didn't need to pass.
Yeah.
Like that's what Son kind of felt like just a fucking regen from ISS 98. For any Aldis out there, it was one of the best football games of all time, of course.
Great stuff. One thing that was interesting, Chloe, about our approach, we were discussing this in the car on the way home, is Liverpool were determined to score a fifth when it went to 4-2, which actually meant that I left the ground feeling more upbeat. When it goes to 4-2, it flattens everything a bit. And so you're going to, and then it ends a bit, it's a bit nervy because you're worried about maybe throwing it away and what have you. But the fact that we did put the ball in the back of the net and it's ruled out and we have a few really good chances made it much more exciting. It meant we kind of went out on bouncing on our toes a little bit. But in reality, it doesn't half sum up where this team's at. It's fucking stupid to play like that when you've got the win. The win's there. It's yours. Just see it out. Liverpool from 3 years ago or 4 years ago don't do that at all. You know, they shut that game down. As I say, it makes it interesting. It gave us really positive feelings, and I'm gutted we didn't score the fifth, but that's balanced out by the fact that if we just shut it down, we wouldn't have been having any of them conversations.
Yeah, and you know, we did have the chances there. Look, we've just mentioned Mo Salah there. We've just mentioned Darwin Núñez, both massive chances to completely finish the game off. And 5-2 does completely finish the game off, but you know, the end-to-end football didn't help us. It was literally, we were so open. Richarlison dropping into that space into being deep and Son being able to take Trent one for one is really caused us problems. But like you said there, I don't think we backed ourselves to sit deep and be defensively switched on and you know, just aware of what's around us enough. So it kind of felt like you still needed that one more goal to just completely kill off the game. Thankfully, we didn't. You know, Alisson makes some really good saves as well, and that some of them are offside, albeit, but still. But yeah, it just felt like this Liverpool side are not a side capable of when, you know, you do concede that first one and you can't quite get back up to it. We are completely and utterly wide open, and it just goes to show the mindset that instead of actually just sitting and being compact, we were like, nah, we'll just try and get the killer blow here. But yeah, it made it a bit more fun, I guess, because
I don't know, I didn't like the 7 minutes of injury time. Like, I'm not sure where it came from, to be honest, but I'm like, did everyone react around you like,
it was like no one needs it, really, no, to be honest.
That speaks to where we're at, though, get this done. And that, maybe that's part of like our approach, because it is a little bit like, oh, we're third now given the result prior to our game, of course, let's just go gung ho, kind of what will be. But also, having said all of that, I'd like to think it was that, but let's be brutally honest about it, our game management hasn't been great at all season. Yes. We're not particularly savvy, we're not particularly street smart when it comes to that sort of stuff, so it's not a huge surprise. Even when we are winning games 1-0, we've kind of just gone, oh, this will be fine, and it clearly isn't thereafter. Yeah. But I think Klopp referenced it as well, the post game about the concession of 2 goals, and he said, next manager will sort that out.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with me.
Yeah. After all the training I'm doing on this, this. It's like it's like coming up to the end of school oldies. It's like, listen, they might not know how to do these times tables, but that's next year's problem. We've just got toy day. We're going to be doing some colouring in.
Yeah.
That's how we're finishing off the last couple of weeks here. yeah, no, I thought that was genuinely hilarious. Where people are looking for really deep analysis from Klopp. He's like, fucking not my problem anymore, mate. I can say that now. Title's done. Yeah. This is season.
Got a bit nervy
done.
The end. Didn't they? Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah. I've got no idea how slots fixing now. Oh my God, you want to know the shit I've tried over these last few years? Yeah.
He's been funny in the press conferences, though, generally, has he? Like, just having a go at them all and stuff like that. Really, it's been fucking great to see. Like,
the best version.
By the way, in that first half, the absolute fume when it might be Basuma or someone goes down in our box and we can counter, and Alisson Becker makes the mind up for the referee by holding the ball. I think that, you know, that's up there for one of Anfield's most fumiest moments, if that's even.
Can we talk about the individual? The biggest moment of individual fume probably seen in the Klopp era was after the second goal, and Alisson kicked the ball angrily and as hard down the pitch as he possibly could.
Just
like fucking dickheads. Go on, there you go. Have your ball. Do what you want with it, you gang of pricks. Yeah.
Who was the Tottenham defender that whacked one into the stands on the halfway line?
Oh, he belted that as well. He nearly killed someone.
I was hoping it, like, the fella or woman or kid got their arms. I mean, he put some power on.
It was
that
a bit of like a boo for him, but after doing
he apologised. He put his hands up into the crowd. He kicked it so hard at a fan.
It was like Alexis McAllister's goal. Like a McAllister's goal against Sheffield United, except it was a Spurs centre half kicking it at a 90 degree angle towards the Kenny Dalglish stand. A sweetly struck,
it was
low, hard, driven, and I'm surprised no one died.
There was one in the second half where Emerson Royal picks up a ball. And Stan loves the second one.
Oh, he turned around and fumed,
and the stand
stood up. They're all like that, Adam. It was brilliant.
That day was good as well, we should mention.
Enjoyed it.
So much love for the Spine Cop people, by the way. And I know it wants mentioning because there's been they've taken so much flack in recent weeks, by the way, off the back of the protests about the rise in ticket prices and what have you. Just look, I know everyone needs to feel like there's someone to blame, and like there's someone else who's taking a lot of the blame, you know, and Darwin Nunes has ended up being the figurehead for sort of Liverpool blame in the last few weeks. But Spine Cop, you know, these are people who voluntarily turn up and help to store the flags, help to get them out, put them away, hand them out to help make the cop a better thing. And there's a load of melts on the internet who are like, calling them out for stuff. Everyone makes decisions. You know, a decision was made. If Spine Cop and Spirit of Shanky, for me, my take and my take only, choose to protest things, I trust them to do that because they've earned the right and they've earned that trust for the great stuff they've accomplished for the football club over the years.
For the fans.
For us, for anyone who ever wants to go to a football match and support the football club, and have a football club in existence in the instance of Spirit of Shankly. So some of the noise I've seen around them, but in terms of Flag Day stuff, amazing.
Absolutely brilliant.
And I would say it's like people blaming them. Don't blame them. Blame the fucking owners for putting the prices up in the middle of announcing prices going up when Liverpool are in a title challenge. Mm. Don't blame the people protesting for it. That's where you go wrong. And this is just a tiny thing of like, it's a pastime. Fucking kicking off by people who own the pastime that we follow. But we see this all the time. It's like people be protesting for a better life for people. It's not the people protesting's fault. All the people kicking off when the M25 gets shut down for people protesting oil and all that kind of stuff. It's like, maybe look at the cause rather than how much it's annoying you. Anyway, good on Spine Cop. Did a fantastic job once again. And everyone who asked you got a banner and a flag and held them all. My only slight criticism of that, and it's annoying, I'd love to, but it's so far, it's the other side of the cop, and I don't like missing the footy, you know what I mean? But it's possible to have a store of flags on my side of the cop. That would be much, much appreciated. There's a guy, Greg, who sits by me, and he misses the first like couple of minutes because he goes down to that side to do it every time. But everyone around me goes, what's he doing missing the start of the game? Well, I was like, no, he goes and waves a flag down the other side. Anyway, a couple of things before we head into the break. People watching on YouTube might notice this absolutely spectacular piece of craftsmanship on the table in between us. Our good friend Quinn has given us this champion's wrestling belt, and it's Liverpool themed. It's got like plates on the side of it for all the competitions that Liverpool have competed in under Jürgen Klopp, the ones that are all featured on the champions wall, and I'm genuinely made up with it, so it warrants mention. It's one of the best things I've ever seen in my entire life, and to be gifted to us is a truly touching and heartwarming moment. We've got a couple of comments and whatever you come in, I want to read. First and foremost, Matty Gorman has joined as a wonder kid. I think rejoined, I want to say. I'm sure Matty's an old school subscriber. Ryan is there and says, walk past Chloe and Paul after the game. Was going to say hi, but I was in a rush to get home. Elliot, Salah, Cody and Robbo, all brilliant. Well, there you go.
You feel loved.
Yeah, absolutely. but not so much enough. And he also says,
there you go.
Random, but did anyone see Alisson after the gobshite's goal at 4-1? I've never seen Alisson that angry before. Last 20 minutes, I was feeling sick. Yeah, we all got in there. We all had those. We're feeling a lot of feelings. It is the Jurgen Klopp Liverpool way, isn't it? Okay, break from us when we return. Some chat on Darwin and some stuff on what Jurgen's going to say to Arne Slot.
Hey guys, Steve here with the announcement about our May competition prize. Yes, one of our Red Men Plus legend subscribers will be winning this, a shirt signed by no one else other than God himself, Robbie Fowler. If you want to be in the hat to win this, you've just got to be a Red Men Plus legend subscriber. It's as simple as that. Go to redmenplus.com, join us as a legend subscriber, get access to all our amazing content, plus some added benefits like the Discord, and like I say, entry into this amazing competition draw as well. If you're one of our Red Men Plus captain subscribers, upgrade your account now, become a legend, get yourself in the draw, and at the end of May, we'll be giving a wonderful, wonderful Robbie Fowler signed shirt to one of you guys. So yeah, see you later.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Shit, sound back. Right, hello everyone, welcome to the Red Men Originals podcast for part two. We've got a few things to discuss. We'll start with the Darwin Nunes stuff. We've kind of skated around it so far, but Dan, do you want to just tell us what this is? Because you're our social guy. What's Darwin done?
And proudly the one who spotted it first. Well, go done. Me. yeah, just last night. So Darwin Nunes essentially initially deleted all posts pertaining to Liverpool up until, I think it was November 2022. Just anything Liverpool related on his Instagram. Not in his bio. His bio still said LFC, but all the pictures, all the posts of him in matches and training, whatever. Anything that was Liverpool just was gone within the space of minutes, it felt like. And I took a screenshot of that and said, 99% certain that Darwin had Liverpool-related things on his Instagram prior to half an hour ago sort of thing. I'm not quite sure what it's all about. I don't know why it's happened, but it's happened. And then in the aftermath of that, it went even further back than that. And I think the only now remaining thing relating to the Reds on his Instagram profile is the day he signed, I want to say. And there's like a picture of him in front of the Liverpool badge, Liverpool crest of his signing day, and that's it. Everything else Liverpool-related is now no more on his Instagram. And the fallout, obviously, I posted that on our social media, our Twitter and stuff like that. The fallout is basically a lot of people sort of suggesting why that could be the case. Maybe it's a case of abuse he's been getting online and stuff like that. But a lot of people sort of referencing the fact he wasn't very happy at full time yesterday and stuff like that. So yeah, ultimately, you know, whatever it is, it's a shame and it's created a lot of talking points and set tongues wagging in Liverpool world.
So what time was this?
Oh, I go to bed pretty early. I reckon maybe 9:30 last night. 9 o'clock, 9:30 last night. our time.
So yeah. Just when he got home, he's been fuming, if we're timelining this.
Mm.
He's got home, he's been fuming all the way, thinking, I'm going to fucking delete my Instagram post here.
And it's, that's how it looks.
That, but that's the specificity of it, because we were talking about,
and all that's still on there. We were
chatting in the office about this before, about like the tropes, the modern football tropes, one of them being deleting your account because you've received so much abuse. You know, Nico Williams did mm-hmm. that. There's deleting your current club from your bio, mm-hmm. and that's normally an indication that you're going to be moving to another football club. But I can't think of any examples where someone's specifically gone back and deleted references to this kind of thing.
It's time consuming. To be quicker to just delete your account.
No, well, that's what I mean. It speaks to the anger and the only example I could think that it comes close to is someone I know who got divorced, who went back and deleted all of their like photos, their wedding photos and photos of their now ex-partner and all that off their social media account. And you're like, okay, you know, like that's obviously, but I get that there's a real, but that's anger and bitterness and wanting to almost like delete a part of your history. This is a guy who's currently a Liverpool player who's got that. So, well, look, we're pure speculation on this one. He's obviously getting a torrent of views, and we've all seen it. I think that the mood towards him's turned in the last couple of weeks. I mentioned it last week about in Box Park, you know, a couple of people, apropos of nothing, well, not because we've just seen the game, but grabbed me and just said to fucking Darwin Nunes and shit and blah, blah, blah. You know, I've heard a lot of very vocal negativity towards him, Chris. And there's no way he's not aware of that sort of thing happening. He wasn't getting his name chanted yesterday, a bit of it when he came on the pitch. But it does feel like he's borne the brunt of Liverpool not still being competing for silver.
Unfortunate, isn't it? But like, when you're playing at the business end of the pitch and you're not taking your chances, I don't agree with sending targeted personal abuse to somebody, but you know, he's been on everybody's minds, hasn't he, because of it and stuff. And this hasn't got anything to do with this, Paul, but I'd just like to remind you that Sergio Busquets still hasn't tweeted since we beat Barcelona 4-0.
5 years today.
Oh, well, there you go. At least it fits in perfectly. Should have mentioned that
myself, I apologise.
Absolutely fantastic. 5 year anniversary of that. So, yeah, thank you, Sergio. We welcome you back to Twitter at any point. I think you're in Miami now, are you, with Lionel? Anyway, back on to Darwin Nunes. I just wanted to get that in there. I've been up and down with him all season long. There was a point pre-Christmas where I just thought he was useless. There's a point where he was the best player in the team and you're like, wow, what a player. He's now, I think, 24 years old. He should be technically, I suppose, in the peak for a striker. He doesn't feel like he's there. But moving into the new manager and the transfer window and everything else, there are going to be big questions, especially if this stays the case where he's not got anything Liverpool on his thing. There were rumours, if you remember, from probably a month or two ago that a few of the players, the new players in the squad, like your Gravenberks and stuff like that, and slightly older players like Darwin Nunes, were unhappy that Klopp was going to be leaving and that they didn't know about his plans and all this type of thing. And, you know, obviously he's not played now in a couple of games. From the start, he was taken off when we were chasing results a couple of games on the bounce as well. There'll be frustration with that, frustration maybe with the manager, frustration with the fact that he's not hit the ground running like we all thought he would, frustration with the fact it's been nearly, you know, 2 years now and, you know, he's not really kicked on. So there'll be a lot of things going around. And to be quite honest with you, he doesn't seem like and I've never met the guy, but he doesn't come across like a particularly well-rounded individual be able to carry these stresses and strains because of the way that he plays football. And that it could be completely wrong on what type of a temperament he's got, but he comes across as a fiery character, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He probably doesn't deal well with this type of situation and stress, and that's not a good thing for us for him.
That's my general sense. A lot of people have been coming up to me at the match and talking to me about Darwin Nunes in particular, and like my overriding take on him is that the more I watch him, the more I think he's got the raw talent there, because we've seen it. You know, people can say one guy was saying he doesn't have the clinical finishes. Like, look at the Newcastle goals. Like, you know, like that is prime Fernando Torres, what he's doing there, getting in behind, using his strength, slotting it in the bottom corner.
All footballers can finish, but it's that, isn't it?
But what I'm saying, he possesses the attributes, but what I'm not sure is that, like, cool, calm, collected customer I think you need to be a world-class number nine. I'm not convinced he's got that. He feels like a wild player. Like, there's everything about him is a bit mad and a bit wild, and not like in a super charismatic way. Just, he just seems very excitable. I joked, but if you told me he was a virgin, I'd be like, he just needs to get laid and then he'll calm down a little bit. Like, you know what I mean? He's obviously not, by the way. He's got kids and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the point is that he feels like someone who's just got a bit, he's got an excess of energy and he just needs to, like, to level out. Maybe, and that could still come, but the more you watch of him, the more there's a thing where it might just be him. This might be him, and we might have to accept that he's always going to be this kind of up and down thing. It's whether we can afford to make our peace with that. And this doesn't excuse, by the way, just to clear things up, this doesn't excuse giving our football player abuse. You can fuck off with that stuff. Like, I mean, thinking someone's crap and then actively targeting them and telling them that, you know, is just fucking banal. Like, but go on, what's your overall feeling on him, Chloe?
How do you sum it up? I absolutely adore the man. I do. It might not seem like I do, but it's just because I'm frustrated, because the football is your biggest passion. Like you said there, I think he's got all the talent, and I think it's absolutely fine to criticise a performance and maybe, you know, his ability of scoring goals or just absolutely thunderbolting them at a goalkeeper. To then go and try and DM him or a family member or something like that is just extremely strange. I could never imagine trying to do that, especially not to try and bring someone down. It's just really weird for people to do that. But him as a footballer, I love him. But I also get so frustrated by him, because we've all seen the talent there. But at the age of 24, he's not got the calmness. Like, even the Everton one from a couple of weeks ago, he looks up at the goal. He sees where the area is, where he should be putting that ball. It's not like he's kept his head down and just volleyed the ball. He looked up. He did what a striker should do. He analysed where the goalkeeper was, and he still didn't have the calmness to put it in the area where he'd seen. And at the age of 24, I don't know how you get him to the point where he is calm in those moments. Hopefully we do have something there, and hopefully a new manager might help him out. Because, like we mentioned, we saw it at Benfica. He was an unbelievable world-class number nine. We saw it when he came to Anfield, and he absolutely ripped us apart. He is a top-quality footballer. But you cannot win the Premier League if he is your number one goal scorer. And that is just my personal belief, because he's so hit and miss. That might change with a new manager. Or, you know, if he goes and... I don't know. I mean, Mo Salah manifests and does all of these things. Maybe Darwin Nunes needs to tap into that. Maybe he already does that. I don't know. But you need
Darwin Nunes and tap it in there.
He needs to be a bit more calm in front of goal and composed. Because when he gets the ball in front of goal, it just looks like there's 1,000 thoughts in his head and he just doesn't know which one to choose. But like we've said there, look, he's boss, and I love him. But it's frustrating, because you see the best of him and then the next week you see him missing sitters. And when you're trying to go for titles, they're what makes you win and lose a title. And if you can't get over the price tag that you paid for him as well. And Liverpool's not a club that can usually do that. But hopefully with a new manager, hopefully maybe just a psychologist or someone, you know, maybe can help him through this, because he was unbelievable at Benfica. He has every finish in the book. He just needs to be composed enough to pick it out in his mind a second before doing the action.
I think Chloe's point there is interesting about him being the main goal threat.
Yeah.
Because I think that's really important. And this is why when we're looking at blame, and I saw someone saying Salah's had abuse as well. And look, again, just fucking don't abuse the football players of your football club. Just give it a rest. Mm-hmm. Again, talk to your mates. Tell your people that you think they're crap or their performance was crap. That's fine. That's how you react to stuff. But like, to calculatedly target someone is just a bit is a bit daft. But I think it's fine. I think his level of performance and his level of goal output and general lateral all-around thing is fine when Salah's on it or someone else there to carry the burden. So I was looking back on it, and as an example of this, Roberto Firmino has only ever had, in his Liverpool time, only ever had one season where he had more goals than what Darwin Nunes has got this season. That was 17-18 when we scored all the goals.
Yeah.
All of them. And to the point on that one, I'm just going to double check the figure on that. He had 16 assists that season. He's got Bobby Firmino's got 26 goals and got 16 assists, which is absolutely outrageously mm-hmm. good. And we got to the Champions League final that season and all that kind of stuff. But after that, Firmino's not touching what Darwin's done here in any other season in terms of combined goals and assists. And actually, goals doesn't really get close to that. And even his assists, you'd be surprised how few assists Firmino actually got, even in good seasons. Mm-hmm. So by Firmino standards, given he's actually getting goals and assists, I think he's doing really well. But I do also take Chloe's point. I don't disagree with that point. If he's the main man, I think that's a point for concern, because he doesn't seem to be able to strike that level consistently throughout the season.
No, he doesn't. And I think it's the way in which they interpret the role as well is very different, isn't it? We know Bobby was essentially the orchestrator of what went on around him, if not the entire football pitch at times, to be honest with you. He was that good, and he made Liverpool tick, certainly the front three, when it was Sadio Mane on one side and Mo Salah on the other. Darwin Nunez, as much as I think certainly early season he came on leaps and bounds in terms of all-round player, I thought we saw a much better version, a much more rounder version of Darwin Nunez, perhaps at the detriment of some of what he was doing going the other way in terms of his attacking prowess. He will never be Bobby Firmino. And so we spoke earlier on about Cody Gakpo maybe being Bobby Firmino 2.0. He clearly has the intelligence and the skill set to potentially get close to that level, if not even surpass it, because as Chris said earlier, I think he's actually got a little bit more to his game than someone like Bobby. Darwin Nunez isn't that guy. He's just never going to be that guy. You need Darwin Nunez to be producing numbers, but I make you right, and I think when you have a firing all cylinders Mo Salah, the conversation and the noise around Darwin Nunez is a lot less, because it was at times this season it's been the case like Darwin Nunez misses two or three chances, but we win the game and Salah scores two, so who cares? Ultimately, everyone moves on with their lives. It's when Salah's missing chances and Darwin Nunez missing chances and you're not winning those games that you go, the finger of blame really comes out and you go, well, we need you to be scoring, what the hell's going on? So yeah, I think it's a difficult one. For me, generally speaking, on Darwin, I've no end near giving up on him yet, personally. I think there's still a very, very good footballer on there. We've all loosely referenced moments and seasons with Benfica and games that he's had. The Brentford goal is the one that sticks in my mind, because we're all rightfully saying that he can't slow things down, he can't be that cool, calm, composed character that you want in front of the goal. Well, he can, because he did it at Brentford. Yeah. He doesn't do it anywhere near often enough, by the way, and he needs to sort of try and recapture that moment if he can. But he clearly has the ability to. So for me, it's something else that's going on right now. Maybe it be a crisis of confidence, a real sort of, I don't know, a lack of ability, a lack of belief in his own ability. I'm not quite sure. But he possesses everything for me. He isn't the robot that Erling Haaland is. That's what we all talk about here when it comes to that robotic, just finish, move on with your life. He isn't that, and he never will be that. But I genuinely believe he possesses absolutely everything it takes to be an elite level striker for Liverpool. We just haven't seen it anywhere near enough, consistently
enough. The goalposts have been moved a lot for strikers now because over the last few years, because of Haaland, because of Messi, because of Ronaldo. A 1-in-2 striker was exceptional for years, and it's still very, very good. Mm-hmm. It just might not be enough to win the Premier League anymore. That's a problem that, you know, we've got with Manchester City and their 115 and their striker and stuff like that. The difficult thing for him is, I agree with pretty much everything you've said there, but I'm going to proffer something slightly different. When he was given the chance at being the main man, he delivered.
Yes.
When Salah wasn't here.
That's true.
Yeah.
When he was absolutely given that chance and everything was funneling towards him, I think there's a bit of a crisis in terms of who are we playing it for?
Yeah.
Are we playing it for Salah? Or are we playing it for Nunez? And that, I think you just need a bit of leadership there to go, this is the way. Mo, if this is what's better for the team, this is who we're the front man. And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, because Mo's still able to be the tip of the spear, if you want to put it that way, and stuff like that. But there's something where there was a real nice balance to our old front three, wasn't there? And they dovetailed in terms of goal scoring output. You look at Haaland's goals, right? We talk about a robot. He goes four games without scoring a goal, and then he'll fucking knock four in.
Yeah.
And he'll go three games and then he'll knock four
certainly
in. It's not a 1-1-1-1-1-1-1 thing.
Yeah.
And most strikers are like that as well.
Yeah.
But we don't judge our own like that. We just look at, oh God, he didn't score in that game. He didn't score in that game. And, you know, no doubt about it, he's been in a bit of a rut, Darwin Nunez, recently. I'm not saying that he hasn't. But even when he's playing well, he doesn't score every game, and no striker scores every single game, and that's on us, to how we view football and how we look at it and stuff like that. And I say Messi and Ronaldo are the ones that changed everyone's output on that, I think.
What I will say is, the people, not everyone, but online v in the ground is, yeah, is a lot different, because for two seasons, no matter whether Nunes can't hit a Barnes or whether he's been absolutely boss, his name still gets chanted around the stadium. And only, you know, against Spurs did it not really get chanted, especially after his big miss. But he comes on and the first thing he does is stand offside and then go and attack a player who's had to play the ball because you're stood offside. And then the crowd instantly was like, not this again. And yeah, that's a problem. We need to know, you know, is it us not playing the ball quick enough? Is it him not looking at the line? What is it that means he's offside in so many? And also,
well, the mad thing about that, Chloe, is that he knows he's offside.
Yeah.
So he waits for the guy to touch it. And then and clearly thinks, this is a new phase. Now, yeah, I can go and attack him. And then he gets, and then he, yeah, when he does, he gets yep, pulled back for offside, which is a bit of, like, I think, being a bit pedantic from the officials. But also, if it's the rule, it's, yeah, the rule, and he's a centre forward, what you should probably do is understand the defenders and strikers need to understand the offside rule, because, yeah, it's the thing that's most important to where you play on the pitch.
Yeah. I think the only thing is, I don't know whether it was because Haaland moved at the same time, or maybe because for Benfica he was their number nine and he was incredible in terms of goals, and he seemed to score in massive moments. And the thing that you've missed from this season is that a lot of big chances have came in moments where Liverpool have dropped points in games, and that ultimately has cost you the title. Yeah. You know, I go back to Luton. Luton was in December, was it? When was Luton? And that was a game where he had the chance to win the game, and he just misses a sitter, let's be honest. And that's the problem. And all strikers have that. Erling Haaland's missed from a yard out in the game, but they've got Phil Foden, Alvarez. They've got how many players to rely on? And towards the end of the season, obviously none of our front three have really kicked on. We're with the Firmino, Salah or Mane. It was always, well, if Salah's not scoring, it's okay, because, yeah, Mane is.
Well, we also don't forget that three. I know, you know, it's in terms of order. Firmino's there, then we had Mane, then we had Salah. Mm. But they were all at a level, and considered at a pecking level. They were all considered, there was level pegging almost between the three of them. They're all basically the same age. There was maybe, like, you know, a year, you know, give or take within them. And now we've split that. Now there's a hierarchy of Liverpool's attack, and it's Salah at the peak, mm-hmm, and everything is Mo Salah centric, and it has to be, because he's delivered and he's been the main man for so long. So you're right, he flourished when he was just, there you go, let's just make you the guy. And it would have been interesting to see whether we could have sustained that without. My suspicion is probably not, you know, because you need to see it more consistently from him. Mm. But I had there was a point here from Zubair Aslam, who said, yes, Paul, but Bobby scored some really important goals in big games, even though he wasn't scoring bags a season. But I was like thinking back to it, and like, yeah, you know, I think we can remember PSG is the one that stands out to me in the Champions League. But even like in this season, I mean, Nunes wins us the Newcastle game. That's a game that is gone. Yeah. Is gone. We should have no sniff of that game until Nunes comes on the pitch. Mm-hmm. And even the Nottingham Forest game,
The problem, I think, what maybe I'm not, don't want to put words into your mouth here, I'll say from my mind instead, but those big moments against Manchester United and Everton and the big games that you know are going to matter at the end of the season, that's where Nunes hasn't stepped up.
Yeah, but equally, and again, neither's Mohamed Salah. And neither's, you know, and someone like Luis Diaz has actually tried his damnedest in that period, and Gakpo stepped up a little bit, which is fine. But this is where we're at. You know, we're comparing these lads to 27-year-old prime of their careers, banging, you know, total perfect understanding, and actually with no one coming in to rotate them other than Divock Origi. So you're safe and secure in what you're doing, and they're all got perfect fitness. None of them ever gets injured, so they never miss a football match, yeah, for us. And now we've got five, six, really, if you count Elliot in the mix, and Doak was in the mix for a little bit as well. Mm. Lads who are in there, that it isn't, it's a different world, isn't it? So yeah, I just think ultimately people need to wind the necks in, given fucking, you know,
the abuse stuff needs to stop, of course. I still have question marks whether Nunes is going to be good enough, but equally, if I was in charge of Liverpool Football Club,
I would find
it very difficult to sell him, because, yeah, I would give him probably one more season,
yeah,
probably, based on the fact that I don't want to sell him and then him be Bosch. Well, yeah, more than anything else, that, which is tells me quite a lot about my opinion of him, to be honest.
Yeah, but that was exactly, I made this exact point to a guy at the ground yesterday. He said, I'd let him go in the summer. I was like, I don't think Liverpool spend that amount of money, put the 2 years of graft into getting him to a level and then sell him as he's entering his prime years as a footballer. That's unless someone's so wild by him, they come in with a stupid offer, a la Sterling or Coutinho in that kind of. But I don't think he's been so impressive that's gonna happen, because that's the level that's better than Coutinho ever done for us. Mm-hmm. It's better than Sterling ever did. Different positions, by the way, but still attacking forward line footballers for us. But the overriding sense is that he's not good, whereas in reality his numbers tell you a completely different story. He just. You're right, when it's come to the business end where we really needed someone to step up
and when he's
had
the chances.
Yeah,
that's
he's been fantastic, yeah, hasn't he? Yeah,
absolutely.
Just quickly on that, to finally say, Arne Slot has a proven track record of improving centre-forwards of that sort of ilk, so let's hope that he can get the best. I honestly believe he's going to look at Darwin Nunes and everything he has to offer and all the tools and all the attributes he has and goes, I can work with that.
Yeah. Well, Chloe, we do need to move on from this. We've got a couple of super chats. Thomas McCarthy says, it obviously could change, but feels like Darwin could have his career be like Balotelli with big moments and what could have been. Yeah, I feel Balotelli's the one that strikes to mind about sometimes where you've got to get it down. At some point, it's got to be by rote. And you're saying, it's great, he's looking up the goal. Don't look at the goal. What are you looking at the goal for? You know where the goal is, you're centre forward. You should have a sense of where the goal is. Good. Great goalies know where the corners are, and great strikers know too. This one by, wow, Jesus Christ, even weighing in on this one. Darwin. Easily the most threatening forward in the Prem. Sure, he's struggling for accuracy right now, but he will come good. I'd kill for him at United. Wow. And Ronan says, Nunes is the 29th player in our history to hit 30-plus goal contributions in a season. He's 24. Ibra had less career goals than Darwin at the same age. Love that. Yeah. Do love a bit of, but that's one that final point on that. There's a ton of those. For Haaland is the brass ring at this point, isn't he? He's what everyone wants, and lots of other clubs have got their own versions of it. You know, people are pairing about Isak at the moment, but there was a spell in the middle of the season where everyone stopped talking about him, where his injuries exactly.
You know, he had a lot of injuries.
And Nicholas Jackson's another one. You know, he goes really hot and cold, doesn't he? And then you've got the Hoyland at Manchester United as well. No one's him, but actually of all of them, it's Isak. Isak's probably the one that everyone's most sort of sweet on at the moment. But again, as you talk about, availability is an issue. Right. Last thing before we wrap up, Arne Slot has been speaking up and sort of around at the same time, you know, becoming Liverpool's next manager. He basically said when he took the Feyenoord job, he spoke to the outgoing manager to get some advice and whatever. So I want to know from you guys, Arne Slot rings Jurgen Klopp and says, all right, Jurgen, give me the lowdown. What do I need to know about Liverpool? Now, in this particular scenario, you guys at home are Jurgen Klopp. What are you saying? One piece, two pieces. If the quick three pieces of advice, do you feel as the handover you'd be telling the incoming talent to the new incoming manager?
You've got to sit down with Red Men TV for an interview. Yeah. It would be absolutely fantastic for your career. You'd make them. I think Brendan Rodgers is a terrible landlord would probably be the second thing. Genuinely and seriously now, trust the people at Liverpool, because they're as much as Jürgen is part of the reason that we are who we are. It was the analytics department and the data science department that helped to catapult us up there as well. So trusting the people around you would probably be the other one, and lean into the fans.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
I've got two others though, it's fine.
Go on.
Very on brand, one of mine. Back the youngsters and harness that academy, because there's a lot of talent. We've seen it at times this year, obviously, and there's a lot more to come. And my second one was harness the fans and use the fans. But my third was build around Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah. I think it's huge, isn't it? Because we referenced it a couple of weeks ago on a show, but there's a lot of hallmarks here from like Rafa Benitez coming in from Gerard Houllier with Gerard and like going, who do you know, contract's going to be a huge central part of that. When his next contract is probably going to put him, it's definitely going to put him on par with Virgil. there's a conversation, do you put him on par with someone like Mohamed Salah in terms of wage? And what's the next thing? You can't build a future around Virgil van Dijk. You can't build a long-term future around Salah. So who's your other best player? And it's Trent. And that is that's going to be a fascinating conversation. I reckon Trent's dying to know what's said there. And it's make or break, isn't it, Dan? Because you know, Trent's got a decision to make. I think there's an alternate future where Trent's playing in Real Madrid's midfield inside the next couple of years. And
I hate the fact they're Bezzy and Bellingham, you know.
All that thing that we thought was going to work in our favour, and then you see them celebrating in the white shirts, fist pumping out of cars when they've won more titles. That's almost the biggest conversation he's likely to have this summer.
I think it is the biggest one, personally, and there's so many facets to it as well. It's not just his importance to the team and how pivotal he is going to be to us moving forwards. It's the plain and simple as, where's he going to play? That's a huge part of this as well, because we've already seen him do a lot of the midfield stuff. There's a lot of talk, there's a lot of buzz around him potentially moving into midfield. Obviously, slot system and what he wants to implement will be a big factor in that. The emergence of Conor Bradley has played a part in these conversations as well, it's fair to say. So, yeah, sitting down with Trent and working out and sort of planning out the future and how Liverpool 2.0 continues to look thereafter is going to be fascinating. But as I mentioned right a moment ago, like, him and Trent and getting the best out of Trent and making sure that not everything, because that's silly, but almost everything that we do is tailored around getting the best out of Trent is absolutely crucial.
Don't try and be Jurgen Klopp. Yourself. Implement your style of play. Implement who you are. And be passionate, because if you can give the fans something to buy into, you become our main man. It's manager over player at this football club every day of the week. So go and write your own history, go and create your own football team, play the way you want to play, because the goals of Liverpool fans will naturally change, because we know that it's a big transition this season. So just make sure that, like, you're not trying to carry on from Jurgen Klopp. You're creating your own Liverpool, and make sure it represents you, and it's something that the fans can really buy into, because as long as you've got them on your side, you've got time.
Liverpool fans smell bullshit very, very quickly. Yeah. And I must admit, I was totally bought in with Brendan Rodgers, and I think a lot of it coming off the back of what we've gone through from Hodgson and things not quite being, you know, being able to rekindle it with Kenny. It was a nice, fresh sort of thing. Him coming in, I think Brendan understood what a Liverpool manager was meant to be, certainly more than Hodgson did. And I think he tried to be a Liverpool manager as opposed to just being himself and being
playing
an
the
ultimate
part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's my slight, I agree with you there, that's going to be an interesting thing, and we won't know until he gets in. Jurgen Klopp was just himself. Him being him ended up being the perfect fit for Liverpool. I don't think it's something you can manufacture. I don't think it's something you can blag, because we'll see straight through it. And it's a really interesting test for him of what if he is actually naturally like Jurgen Klopp? How do we vibe with that? He's got to roll with it. What does he do to the crowd? You know,
did
what I mean?
This, like, yesterday.
The waves.
Yeah.
He's definitely got a connection with the final. Which bodes well, doesn't it? Yeah.
And he's pretty outspoken as well.
He's
also cheeky.
There's
something, it's a funny, because people have this, like, think about the Dutch in general as being like quite chill and relaxed. I think that comes from, like, obviously, like, the Amsterdam and marijuana connections, brilliant. But actually, Dutch people are very forthright, very, very strong, very cut to the chase. Don't like wasting energy with bullshit conversation. They'll just tell you exactly how it is. And I think that will be quite refreshing as well to some extent. So yeah, sticking to his guns. One thing for me, and it goes back to, I reference a Klopp interview a lot, but that thing of, like, goals win games, defences win titles, and what Klopp was saying actually post the Tottenham game of, like, the next manager's got to sort that out. That's what I'd be saying to him now. I'd be going, look at what you've got here, mate. Even if you don't, you know, your number one mission here has just got to be to figure out how to stop conceding goals, because the attack is there. You've largely got the players. You might want to fine tune a few bits and pieces here, maybe add a bit more depth on the flanks or whatever. But if you can just figure out how to teach this team how to keep clean sheets, you're going to be right in with a chance of winning the title. That for me is like almost like that's on the whiteboard. That's what gets left on the whiteboard in the manager's office. Just learn how to teach this team to stop conceding goals. Circled. Trevor retired. Permanent ink. Yeah, because that's, if they do that, then yeah, unstoppable. Any more for any more? No. Any advice on transfers?
Trust Edwards. Again, good.
Trust Edwards. My final one, and we'll do loads more on transfers over the summer, is there's a world where I think if we knew Henderson and Fabinho were definitely leaving in the summer, I think, and given what money we freed up to bid for Caicedo, I think we'd have been putting it in on Rice from a lot earlier on. I think we'd have tried everything in our power to get him involved. Mm. And that's the one for me, is that if you can only do one thing in this summer, it's go out and buy someone who's as good as Rodri and Declan Rice for the Liverpool midfield.
Does that exist?
Yeah,
at the club.
Well, the thing is, you know, it was Fernandinho.
No, you're talking about Trent in the middle, aren't you?
Well, yeah, but it was Fernandinho, no. And he was coming toward the end, and Liverpool went, "We need someone who can do for our team what Fernandinho does," and we went out and bought Fabinho, and then when we got Fabinho, Pep went, "Well, we need someone who can do what Fabinho does, but for us," and that's just the way it works. And we might have missed the trick by not getting Rice, but. There's loads of footballers, loads of them.
Mm.
So yeah, Mike, what would you do? What was your piece? What was your one solid cast iron written in permanent marker on the whiteboard in the manager's office piece of advice be from Jürgen Klopp to Arne Slot? Let us know.
I think Jürgen's might be broke stays broke. Don't trust the injured players. They will continue to get injured. Yeah. Don't fall for it. It's happened like right the seasons down that it's happened. Look at the positions where I've trusted the injured players are going to stay fit.
Stay away from Naby Keita.
Yeah. Right, Sal. More to come from us. We're doing the Bias Football podcast straight after this one. So come and join us on redmenplus.com for that. We're going to be doing the title race. We're going to be doing a couple of the bits and pieces because it's mathematically still possible for Liverpool to win the league.
It's true.
Yeah, it is. It's true.
Are we going to be doing the race for third?
We're going to be doing...
We're winning that one.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're going to be doing the race for Europe. That's where it's gotten down to now. Chelsea flying, United, not so much. Anyway, thanks for joining us. See you over there. Ta-da.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.